Recent research shows that the average 8 to 10-year-old American spends 8 hours a day with electronic media. What is all this screen time doing to our children? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will talk with a clinical psychologist this hour who says parents need to limit screen time in order to improve their children's well-being. And we will welcome your questions and your own experiences. Do you think your children are spending too much time online or on screens? Do you think they're addicted to the internet? What about you? Are you addicted to the internet? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our conversation is prompted in part by the documentary Web Junkies, which is going to air tonight on Wisconsin Public Television. It's about how China deals with children who they believe are addicted to the internet. Our guest was quoted in a New York Times column by Jane Brody on screen addiction. Screen addiction is taking a toll on children, so we thought we would invite her to talk with you. Dr. Catherine Steiner-Adair is a clinical psychologist, research associate in the Department of Psychiatry at Harvard Medical School, and an associate psychologist at McLean Hospital. She is a speaker and author of several books, including The Big Disconnect, Protecting Children and Family Relationships in the Digital Age. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And now, what I want to ask you first is, you have not seen this documentary, probably. I have not. But I'm just curious. Its title is Web Junkies. It's China being the first, I guess, country to declare screen time an addiction. And they're treating children for this addiction, kids who are playing games, you know, 24/7 without even going to the bathroom. They're so addicted. Do you believe that the internet is addictive to children?
Well, you know, we in the States are doing our research. Both China and South Korea have identified web addiction, and in particular gaming addiction. It's really the term I think we're going to end up using is technology addiction, because it's not that people are actually addicted necessarily to the internet itself, but neurologically we're just beginning to really understand that not all people, but some people, really are more vulnerable for a host of reasons to becoming addicted to gaming, to shopping, to porn, to different aspects of screen-based entertainment because of the way it's a stimulant for the brain in the same way that other stimulants are also addictive, and we all know that the human brain loves stimulants.
Yeah, well, and some of us also like the little red ding and the notification on Facebook.
That's exactly right. You actually get a dopamine lift. The part of your brain that is a pleasure, happy, high, excited part lights up, even when you hear the ping of your phone, and it's, you know, in your back pocket.
Yeah.
Not to mention all the likes and favorites.
Well, the addiction aside, what is the screen time and gaming time and technology time doing to our children?
Well, it all depends on who your children are and what kind of parent you are. For parents who set clear limits and follow the advice that's out there, no screens of any kind for children under the age of 2, a half hour to an hour for 3 to 5 or 7. Same all the way really through elementary school. You know, for many children, whether or not they handle technology well is completely dependent on how their parents handle technology. So by middle school and high school, it actually gets more complicated because kids are doing a lot of homework now. Many people think too much homework now on screens, and of course they're multitasking, which is a myth because it's not like we're equally doing everything well, but they have split screens. So they're doing their homework, yeah. They're playing a video game, they're watching YouTube, etc. So, you know, it's really a situation where parents have to maintain their parental authority while their children are young, and both parents and schools have to really teach kids how to self-regulate. And that's where Korea is leading the world right now.
Well, according to the American Academy of Pediatrics, two-thirds of parents have not set a limit on screen time for their children.
Yes.
So why is it a problem for children to have unlimited screen time?
If a child has unlimited screen time, they will come to prefer the stimulation of an iPad. So the magic of the iPad is pretty alluring, especially to a young child. You do something right, you get butterflies, you get sparkles, you get a brigade of trumpets. If something is frustrating, you just can hit reset, refresh, you get right back up. It's not like building blocks in real life where if something crumbles, you have to start all over again, and it's slow and frustrating. On the Internet, everything is fast. They get you to the next level. There's a world of difference between playing in real life for kids and playing on the Internet, and the Internet is in some ways more gratifying and more stimulating, but not always in a good way. And like any stimulant, once you start to use it, you start to crave it. Mm-hmm. And when it's taken away, you have a meltdown. You know, I've been traveling around the world and all over America for the last 2 years, and parents everywhere say, you know, my kid's basically a really good kid, unless I say, put Minecraft down, your time is over, and then they become a lunatic. You know, and parents use the language of addiction describing their kids. And kids use the language of addiction describing their parents.
Wow. Well, how is this any different than, say, when I was a kid and my mom said I was watching too much TV? TV has always been called the electronic babysitter. How is this different?
It's quite different in good ways and bad ways. The good is that if your child is playing a truly educational game, they are it's highly interactive. They're creating content. If they're learning how to code using little bits or one of the great coding games for kids, they're learning something that is intellectually really stimulating as well as neurologically stimulating. And, you know, or if they're writing fan fiction or, you know, playing chess or checkers or something online, that's interactive and not passive. TV is passive. When we watch TV, we are sitting in a passive way. We are being entertained. We don't create anything. The content has been created. The other big difference is people fall asleep watching TV because of the distance and because the brain is more relaxed watching TV. And the lights are very different on TV because it's at a distance and the computer screen is more of a stimulant. So there's a huge difference in terms of whether kids calm down. You know, often parents put their kids in front of a good old Disney film or something, you know, for an hour or two just to quiet them down. Well, if you put your child in front of Candy Crush for 15 minutes, it doesn't quiet them down. It revs them up.
Yeah. Well, so if parents are limiting screen time, are we limiting the screen time that they're playing Candy Crush, or are we limiting the screen time that they're playing that educational game?
Well, it all depends on who the parent is. Mm-hmm. But I think that parents are being duped a little bit by how many games are, quote, educational.
Yeah.
You know, we have to remember the baby Einstein phenomenon. Just that name alone, baby Einstein, yeah. Irresistible. Who wouldn't want their baby to be the next Einstein? Well, it all turned out to be false advertising.
It was a myth that if we played is that the one where if you played Mozart and when the baby was in the womb that the
It's all part of that. I mean, music actually is good for babies, but the idea was, you know, the certain mobile, you know, first there were mobiles and then there were, you know, little interactive push boards and stuff like that. I mean, parents are very vulnerable. Of course, we all want the best for our new babies and our infants.
Yeah.
But I can tell you, the research is very clear. If you want your baby to be the next Einstein, keep them off of screens.
Yeah. So we have just a minute or so before we take a break for news. Talk some about why we need to protect family relationships in the digital age.
Well, in my research with 1,000 children between the ages of 4 and 18 and 250 young adults, 18 to 30, I found a very unusual phenomenon. usually kids at different developmental ages have their own problems and perceptions of their parents, and they change. You know, we say little people have little problems, big people have big problems. Well, kids of all ages use the same adjectives to describe how they felt frustrated by their parents. They cannot get their parents' attention. Angry, sad, mad, frustrated, and lonely. And we've seen a spike of about 40% of people of all ages and families saying they report at one time or another feeling more lonely under their roof in their house because they want to connect to somebody and that somebody is connected to a screen. And I think everybody who has, you know, any kind of technology at home has experienced this. And a new study out of Amsterdam just found very similar findings.
We'll talk more about maybe limiting all of our screen time, not just children, after we check the latest news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with the author of The Big Disconnect, Protecting Childhood and Family Relationships in the Digital Age. Dr. Catherine Steiner-Adair is a clinical psychologist and a research associate in the Department of Psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. We are welcoming your questions and your experiences for her. So do you limit screen time for your children? What about yourself? Do you feel as though technology, iPhones and iPads and the like, is disrupting your family relationships? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So, Dr. Steiner-Adair, what about, we were prompted to talk about the effects of screen time on children, but it's also the effects of screen time of their parents on children, it sounds like. That's
the conversation we need to pay, I think, more attention to than we have so far.
Mm-hmm. And the children are reported being frustrated and lonely and even angry at their parents because of the amount of time we are spending online.
That's right. And when you look at it from their perspective, it's very understandable. To begin with, adults have a very hard time self-regulating also with technology. And we adults have created new norms that just 10 years ago would have been unimaginable. We think it's okay when we are talking to a child or our husband or wife or somebody, you know, important to us to, at the sound of a ping or a ringtone, suddenly turn our attention completely out of that conversation, take a call, and ask somebody, the other person, to just stand there frozen in time. And, you know, 10 years ago, before we all had smartphones, that would have been considered unbelievably rude.
Oh, yeah. And so what advice do you have for parents? When should parents unplug?
Well, you know, I sort of culled all the feedback I heard from 1,250 kids, and there are key times in the day where children particularly really are frustrated and upset with their parents when their parents are on the phone. The first piece of advice I would give to parents is get up a half hour earlier and do all your email and all your connecting before your kids are up, because kids need our undivided attention getting out the door, getting ready for school. It's a frantic time in most households. All it takes is one lost sneaker or, you know, one textbook you can't find, and there's a big meltdown. And the problem is that we respond very differently to our kids when they interrupt us if we are online. If we're just scrambling eggs and hanging out in the kitchen, we're much calmer. It's okay, honey. I know where your sneaker is. Don't worry. Yes, I will be there exactly at 3:15 at pickup. Don't worry. But if we're texting, we get irritable and short, and our tone of voice is very different. Hold on. Wait, I'll find your sneaker. This is important. This is for work. Yeah. So we add to the tension rather than calm them down, which is upsetting to them in addition to the fact that we're just not paying attention. The second thing is when we're texting, we don't hear well. And kids talk about having to go, mom, 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 you know, mm-hmm. and escalate their voice, and the intensity of their frustration escalates with it. because our auditory processing drops as we are focusing into the screen. And we also kind of lose sense of where we are in time and space. So kids will say, you know, I think grown-ups still think they have those glass booths around them because they say all sorts of things on their smartphone that we are not supposed to hear.
Right.
And it's true. We become disinhibited. So, you know, as I've been flying around the country, I hear people saying things on airplanes that should be HIPAA-protected. You know, they're naming names, they're naming salaries, they're naming patients. I mean, it's we become disinhibited. We just haven't learned to outsmart our smartphones yet. So that is really stressful for kids. The next time in the day where children really don't like their parents being on phones is when they're in the car on the way to school or picking you up at the airport, if you're coming home from college.
Especially if you're driving, right?
Yeah, you know, if you're on Bluetooth, in many states that's legal. But it's not what anybody other than you perhaps, you know, need in the car. Little children on the way to school should not be playing Ninja Fruit Fly. They should be talking to you. They should be daydreaming. They should be staring out the window, dealing with what we call anticipatory anxieties, if they have that. You know, will my teacher be there? Will we have a substitute again? Did I study enough for my French test? Whatever it is. And, again, when you give them a Ninja Fruit Fly or they're texting with their friends, it quiets them. The ride is peaceful. But particularly for little kids, you're giving them a stimulant. You're not helping them deal with what they're feeling inside. You're distracting them.
Yeah.
And that's not the right or best way to prepare a child to arrive at school.
And we can talk about some of the other times that parents can unplug. We have some callers also with questions.
Sure.
But if parents are going to unplug or disconnect more, that's also going to be setting a better example, I would think.
Absolutely. I can always tell when a child in a focus group has learned the word hypocrite.
Yeah.
Because they'll say, my parents are such hypocrites. You know, they say no phones at the table, and then they're always taking a call.
We are talking with Dr. Catherine Steiner-Adair, clinical psychologist and author of The Big Disconnect, Protecting Childhood and Family Relationships in the Digital Age, talking about how we all need to limit our screen time in order to improve our children's well-being and our well-being and our family's well-being. And we're welcoming your questions for her, any experiences that you have. Do you try to limit your screen time or the screen time of your children? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Mike in Reedsburg is with us first. Hi, Mike.
Yes, good morning. It's funny listening to your show because my young teenagers in the family here, we just started camping. We used to do the tent camping once a year or so, but we just started trailer camping. And this past 4th of July, we were gone for the whole week. So when we're going there, I said to the kids, I said, all right, let's make a pledge to each other. No, you guys, no electronic devices all week. And they're all like, well, usually they always grumble, and their first question whenever we go camping is there Wi-Fi in the campground?
Yeah.
You know, and I said, no electronic devices all week, kids. Come on, just give it a try. And they said, okay, we will if you will, because you guys are on it all the time.
Uh-huh.
And they have never, ever said that before. They've never, ever mentioned that before at all or made mention of the fact that when we've asked them to cut it down that, you know, you guys are on it as much as we are. So anyway, long story short, the whole week we were there, and at the end of the week we had to search for the electronic devices because they actually were having fun and doing things all week long and never gave it a thought. And it was a wake-up call for us because we never realized how much our teenage kids noticed how much we are actually on, and a lot of it is work-related, but how much we fail to disconnect when they're around us.
Oh, well, congratulations for making that realization and for your fun weekend, Dr. Steiner-Adair.
You know, Mike, that's such a great story. It's such a great teachable tale because it's so important that families make sure on a weekend, you know, take a tech Shabbat, you know, make sure you have time where you're all as a family offline every weekend. And think very carefully about your vacations, because the more you can have unplugging be part of your family vacation, the more family time and memories and, you know, cohesion and love and connection you'll be creating. Not that it's always easy, you know, not that we don't all squabble a lot, you know, but the point is that if you go to a tech-free zone, or a place where there's no Wi-Fi, it creates a kind of calmness and fun and interaction and engagement that's very hard to replicate when technology is an option.
Yeah, you know, I noticed my, I'm going to say minor addiction because it's not overwhelming yet, but I did do a cruise. It was a work-related cruise to Alaska, and I did not purchase the, you know, the internet package that they had, and I was without Wi-Fi for much of this, and it you do, you know, there's you're like, oh my gosh, you know, I, what's going on at home, or what, you know, I would love to post this picture, but I can't, or, and it's strange how quickly we have become so dependent on it.
It is. That's what I meant when I said, you know, so quickly in just 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
You know, kids who go away to summer camp for a month, whether they're counselors or campers, you know, especially the counselors, you know, talk about the first 2 or 3 days of no Wi-Fi. They were having withdrawals and, you know, what they would call withdrawal symptoms. And that's not like addiction withdrawal necessarily, but withdrawal with a small W. But once they get over that, they feel so enlivened and fun and goofy and present to one another in real life in a way that they say exactly the same thing that the previous caller said.
Yeah. And I can imagine, I'm not sure if it's on your list, but when you are on a vacation or on a, you know, a road trip or something on a vacation, that seems to me you should be enjoying the sights and learning together and not all, you know, buried into your iPads.
You know, the advice I have in the book about that is come up with a plan before your vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And talk about it as a family in a you know, hopefully a relatively calm way. And if, in fact, you for work or your kids for school or just for, you know, social reasons feel like they need to connect online while you're on vacation, designate times where everybody can. And if nobody, you know, if somebody doesn't want to, that's the time to read a book or draw or sketch or something. But stick to it. Set a plan, a time a day, 2 times a day if you really need it, and then have the whole time in and around that be tech-free. And that takes all the tension out of the, hold on, I just need to check. Wait a second, you can't check. We said, you know, all those arguments. And the place where that can get tricky while we're on summer vacation right now is when parents who are siblings have different ideas about what's okay.
Yeah, yeah. There, I'm not going to name any names, but I recently became aware of a new game that can be played online where if you're traveling, and I happen to be in a car with two people who were addicted to this game, and I'm going to say addicted because you collect like landmark markers. You claim, I was at this, you know, this tourist site. I was at this a landmark. And the entire time is spent, I guess, marking and claiming these little prizes online. And I guess the goal is to get as many as possible. But, you know, I'm mixed emotions about that because there is certainly no conversation about those landmarks except, oh, I got it.
You know, this is exactly the kind of distracting, kind of meaningless, neurological stimulant that is, you know, addictive with a small A. You get into it, plays into our competitive nature. It gives, makes something like a long car ride. It punctuates it in a way that is, you know, exciting, but is it meaningful? And do you get more out of saying, oh, I got this landmark, probably often not even knowing what it is or perhaps even stopping to see it or study it, than you would talking to somebody about where they grew up or how they feel about the upcoming election? So these are that's such a great example, Joy, of what pulls us away from each other. And then there you are. Yeah, you know, let's say you're in a car. There are 4 of you in a car. There's a driver who's concentrating, and the other 2 people are playing that. You're left by yourself.
Yeah.
And is this how we want to be together?
Right. Aaron in Viroqua is with us. Hi, Aaron.
Hello. I had a question for you. When I was growing up, I'm 33 years old. I have a young son, and he's just about 2. And like you said, he throws tantrums if he gets taken away from the iPad. And I've just seen a lot of problems with it. But my question for you is, my grandfather and my dad, I graduated in 2000, and of course, the internet wasn't real popular then yet, and a lot of older people that I know are just really true intellectual people. Mm-hmm. You can ask them a lot of different things about history, and they know it. They don't have a smartphone. They don't have to Google anything. They just know it. So my question for you is, are we entering an age in which the generation coming up raised on the smartphone, are we eliminating the true intellectual?
Well, Nicholas Carr wrote a wonderful book called The Shallows, and there's another interesting book called Are We Rome? And, you know, a lot of people are questioning how this is changing. And there's another book called, you know, Technology or the Internet Making You Stupid. One of the things that kids and young adults especially, our brain doesn't finish developing to 25. Deep focus, the capacity for sustained, deep, reflective thinking is a muscle, if you will, in the brain. It's a skill that will only come through repetitive practice and being developed. And there's a world of difference between taking a 3 or 4 hour philosophy exam where you are constantly writing further and further and deeper into a question of inquiry where you yourself have to get to, quote, the next level of thought and reflection, and Google searching an answer, getting it quickly, and, you know, getting your information at a very fast and superficial rate online. And what some people are saying, and certainly teachers are very concerned about, is that kids, when they grow up playing a lot of games early on in life, they don't even have the patience to do that kind of deep intellectual thinking. And it does seem to, you know, be a concern everywhere I go, whether I'm in Asia or in the UK or here in America. Are we creating sort of the same discipline in the humanities, literature, art, art history, philosophy, world religions, political theory, as we used to have? And these are the foundations for all thinking. So you are not alone in sharing that concern.
Yeah. Let me bring in another caller with a somewhat related a question before our news break. Tom in Burlington. Hi, Tom.
When the kids are typing on the typewriter, and they're not learning how to their hand eye coordination. They're not using cursive writing in uppercase and lowercase like we did. And how does this affect them?
Well, we're seeing a whole lot more referrals for 5, 6, and 7 year olds for OT, occupational therapy, in elementary school. You know, when kids are playing on a computer all day, they're basically using their index finger, or maybe, you know, they're just text typing. But they're not moving around physically. Not only are they not using their full hand, which is important not only for learning cursive writing, when you work with your hand, when you play with Play-Doh, you're developing your brain, and different links are happening, you know, when you're building with Legos in real life. So what we see is in these kids really great eye-hand coordination, which is good, you know, when it comes to work on screens. It might not be translate necessarily to other things, but underdeveloped other physical kinesthetic awareness, and, you know, frankly, health habits, getting up, running around, playing outdoors, etc. So the ramifications are larger than cursive writing.
We'll pick up on more on the effects of screen time or too much screen time on children and what this is doing to our family relationships as well. Our guest is Dr. Catherine Steiner Adair, a clinical psychologist research associate in the Department of Psychiatry at Harvard Medical School and an associate psychologist at McLean Hospital, speaker and author of several books, including The Big Disconnect, Protecting Childhood and Family Relationships in the Digital Age. So do you limit screen time for yourself or your children? What experiences can you share with us on how screen time is affecting your family relationships? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. The news is next. ¶¶ Are you addicted to the internet? How about your children? We are talking with the author of The Big Disconnect, Protecting Childhood and Family Relationships in the Digital Age. And we are welcoming your questions about limiting screen time for our children and for ourselves. Also talking about the effects of screen time on children. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our conversation prompted in part by the documentary Web Junkies, which will be airing tonight on Wisconsin Public Television. It's about internet addiction in China and how China deals with children who they believe are addicted, especially to gaming. This documentary was highlighted in a recent column by Jane Brody on screen time's effects on children. The column Screen Addiction is Taking a Toll on Children is also posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest, Dr. Catherine Steiner Adair, clinical psychologist, was quoted in that column. Well, we have Lou who says, my animals notice when I'm on my devices too much. They come and bring me toys because they want my attention. How about that? That I can relate to that as well, Dr. Steiner Adair.
You know, isn't it something? Our animals are so sensitive, and they have such keen intelligence to whether we are present to them or not. And, you know, it's like someone said, I think my dog can sniff when I'm about to hit my power on button. And it's true, you know, the subtle ways in which we remove our attention from one another when we dive into the screen are perceptible to those around us. Babies, I think, also, in my observations, are aware of it. You know, of course, they can't speak. Like puppies, little toddlers will grab their phones from the parents or hide them or throw them in frustration or take their face and turn their cheek. You know, look at me, look at me.
They say that cats like warm keyboards, but my cat wants to be in my face because I'm not in his, you know.
Exactly right. And it's certainly not that older children need our attention 24/7, but there are pivotal times in the day when they do. And most of all, when they need us, they want us to turn to them in a receptive way. Yeah, honey, what is it? What can I do for you? And we're not as good at that. We have to train ourselves when we turn away from a screen to a person to be more empathic and a little gentler, because usually we're annoyed.
We've already talked about how we should unplug, parents should unplug when you're getting the kids ready for school in the early morning. We certainly should not, we should unplug, and the kids should not be unplugged in the car on the way to school.
Mm-hmm.
We talked a little bit about vacations and how we might come up with an arrangement with our kids regarding screen time. What are some other key times that parents and kids should be unplugged?
Well, kids have a habit now these days of coming home and wanting to just play some computer games,
yeah.
You know, Minecraft, whatever it is. And honestly, it's better for children, especially elementary school age children, to come home and play outside, be physical, get a good snack, run around. That's how they sort of hit the reset, reboot button for elementary age school children, for sure, as well as middle school. But they're usually doing after school activities anyway. When parents come home, it's very important that you not walk in the door mid-conversation or with your earpiece in, because you're not coming home. You're bringing work to home. And it was very poignant to me to hear children, whether they were 6 or 16, say, I don't even go up and say hi to my mom or my dad when they come in, because all I get is, shh, wait one sec, honey, you know, because they're mid-conversation. So stand out in the rain or the heat or the snow and finish your phone call. And come home with the understanding that you're really coming home to plug into your family. And think about, is there really any reason you can't put up an away message and say, I'll be back online at 8? Or, you know, just give yourself an hour or an hour and a half or 2 hours just to be for yourself, disconnected from work and calls and other people, so you can hang out with your family.
Let's go to Con in Green Bay. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Joy.
Morning. Yes, go ahead. You were going to tell a story about your nieces and nephews?
Yeah, I do have, with my nieces and nephews, I just realized that, them being the third generation in my family, I just realized that they are more attached to TVs and computer screen, and it's really affected their social skills. Me, I'm more of an extrovert, and what I can tell is when we're meeting and greeting new people and just interacting, you know, with different individuals that we haven't met yet, I see that they are like almost in like their little shell. They're not outgoing, and they're more introverts, I would say. So I think that gaming computer screen has really affected the social aspect of it.
So are they affecting our kids' social skills, Dr. Steiner-Adair?
Well, yes, and again, it's in both directions, honestly. For kids who have social anxiety, the Internet can, on the one hand, really help them connect to people because it feels safer. You're more in control of flow. You're more in control of the conversation. You don't have to think of something witty or feel embarrassed if you don't know what to say back. So kids will say they make friends online with people in their school that they wouldn't ordinarily have the courage to say hi to, but then when they see them at school, they can say hi to them. On the other hand, we see when kids are socializing more on screens than in real life, they can sometimes develop more social anxiety, in particular perfectionism. Girls are very vulnerable to comparing themselves to how everybody else looks, what everybody else is doing, because that's how girls are socialized to get their identity. And when you spend tons of time on Facebook and scrolling through and looking at everybody's, you know, quote, so-called perfect life, it can lead to kids feeling more anxious about going out in the real world. And even college kids talk about how it takes so much effort to get dressed and get, you know, yourself together and go out to party. In some ways, it's just easier and more fun to stay in your PJs in your dorm, go on Tinder, go on Instagram, and, quote, hang out that way.
Yeah.
And
we have less than a minute, Dr. Steiner-Adair. What do you want parents to do today, especially to reduce this toll that screen addiction is taking on children?
Well, the first thing I would say is think about your own habits and think about how much control you have over yourself. I think about what are the family times you want to protect and have be completely screen-free. Bedtime, bath time's another one. Then I would think about, are you intimidated by your children's meltdowns? And, you know, if you are, get help with that, because you need to really trust your own parental authority. If you have a child that you are concerned about who really seems to be showing signs of problematic behavior, like lying or hiding their computer or sneaking their computer or pretending to be sick so they can stay home from school when in fact they're gaming, then, you know, get some professional advice.
Yeah, and we'll have to leave it there as we're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us. Dr. Catherine Steiner-Adair is author of The Big Disconnect, Protecting Childhood and Family Relationships in the Digital Age. Time now for a special report on the state budget. Governor Walker vetoed 104 items in the state budget before signing the document yesterday. Some of the vetoes caught Republican state lawmakers by surprise, and Democrats say overall the budget contains too many surprises. Chuck Kornbach reports.
The governor set a personal best with the 104 vetoes, yet didn't mention them during his remarks at the bill signing event. Instead, Walker, who's likely to formally announce his presidential bid later today, talked about the contents of the budget and how he says it shows state government is working.
The difference between Wisconsin and Washington is we actually get things done.
Republican legislative leaders Scott Fitzgerald and Robin Voss weren't at the bill signing. Several other lawmakers avoided the media after Walker's speech. But suburban Milwaukee State Senator Alberta Darling came over to talk with reporters. The co-chair of the legislature's budget committee said she didn't know what Walker had vetoed.
I have not had a chance to review the vetoes. I could have, but I didn't think there was much I was going to do about it right now because this is the governor's job.
You can find the list of vetoes online at the Wisconsin Department of Administration website. but here are a few highlights various reporters spotted last evening. Walker has dumped a plan to expand the payday loan industry. He's reduced an attack on the Citizens Utility Board. He's adjusted changes to the Family Care and IRIS programs to add more control for the Department of Health Services. He's given the DNR more control over education and science staff layoffs, and the list goes on. But Walker has not dropped major cuts to the UW system. He's also kept an expansion of school vouchers and changes in the prevailing wage law, as well as many other controversial items. The leader of State Assembly Democrats, Peter Barca, put education at the top of his concerns.
The budget sells out our children in K through 12 public schools to allow for rampant statewide privatization of schools. Not only will schools get an effective cut, but it will also siphon off between $600 and $800 million over the next decade and suck it from public schools to put into private, unaccountable voucher schools.
Democrats say another problem with the budget is the way Republicans added many items without much notice or public hearings. Milwaukee Representative Jocasta Zamarripa says that's the case with a plan that could allow a takeover of low-performing schools in her city.
This seismic change was added in the middle of the night by the Joint Finance Committee without the appropriate review and scrutiny.
The Finance Committee also made late changes to the budget with the so-called 999 motion that made dozens of modifications. Samantha Kirkman, a Republican representative from Kenosha County, says when Democrats controlled the legislature, they did the same thing.
There's always been a 999 that comes in at the last hour of the state budget process.
But the number of modifications went up this year, and Kirkman says the 999 motions might merit a closer look. The Joint Finance Co-Chair, Senator Darling, says she's more firmly in favor of ending the practice.
I would like not to have that as a part of our budget because what we did was say, look, you have an issue you need to bring to the table, bring it under the issue area, bring it to the Finance Committee, and we'll debate it.
Governor Walker also did not take questions about the budget process, the vetoes, or anything else. He's preparing for this afternoon's kickoff of his presidential bid and to spend the rest of the week campaigning in five other states. Chuck Kornbach, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And we will, by the way, this evening, starting at 5 p.m., have live coverage of Governor Walker's presidential announcement, which is taking place today at 5 in Waukesha. More on the state budget and that coming up in our state capitol report. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.